The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Matt Howard, EVP Market Development at a company called Sonatype. How are you, Matt?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm trying to figure out if this is an easy or a hard word for radio. S-O-N-A-T-Y-P-E, Sonatype, Sonatype. I think we can understand it pretty good. Matt, tell us about your background, a little about the company here, please.
I am a software entrepreneur and marketer, have had a number of companies locally and have joined Sonatype, and our CEO, Wayne Jackson, as we're scaling the business. Sonatype is a company that provides tools to large commercial enterprises and federal government agencies who are building software and challenged with the effort to accelerate innovation, quality, and security, and our tools help them effectively do all three of those things.
Yeah, we can even boil it down. I mean, it's pretty simple. Many of my listeners are in agencies where their funds are getting pulled back, their people are leaving, and they still have deadlines. And so they have to do it faster, and they have to do it in a secure world, which is it's tying someone's hands. And so what Sonatype offers is maybe they're throwing a life preserver. Hey, here's a life preserver. Here's a way that you can develop code quicker and more efficiently. That's how I understand your company. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, probably the best way to think about it is that software is no longer a marginal cost of doing business. Software actually is the business. It's a strategic weapon for competing and winning on a global playing field. In this world, organizations, whether they're federal government agencies or commercial agencies, have a choice. You can either innovate faster or you can slow down and get left behind. And so the practical reality is, organizations are faced with an intense pressure to deliver innovation faster than ever. And as a result, they're beginning to embrace best practices like DevOps and continuous delivery and even Docker containers as part of their cloud and hybrid cloud strategies. But the name of the game is innovation, and you got to go faster to stay ahead of the competition.
And people should know you have a pretty strong background. You know, you went to school locally, master's degree, founded companies, very successful. So you know a little bit about innovation, I would think, don't you?
I certainly like to think I do, but I can tell you one thing's for sure. The founding team at Sonatype goes way back and deserve a tremendous amount of credit. They were among the original contributors to the Apache Maven project, which in many respects is the sort of the forefront of how software automation really began. Through that history and evolving to today, we've been able to build products that are increasingly relevant for where software development is. I mean, the world we live in now is DevOps native. And fortunately for Sonatype, we have a collection of DevOps native tools that are, you know, honestly sort of a perfect fit for how organizations are attempting to do software delivery faster, better, cheaper.
We know, Matt, there are a lot of listeners who know about DevOps and Apache, and some listeners maybe are trying to manage your mobile devices, and I may not be sure with some of these terms. What I'm going to do is I'm going to paint a picture for you, and then we'll talk about what DevOps is and what it isn't, and then maybe build from there. Now, because I'm an old geezer, I remember years ago people would go to school and they'd be computer programmers, and they'd write lines and lines of code. And what happened over the years, it dawned on people that, well, this is very similar to the code I wrote last week, and there's ways to reuse code. And so code got to be more and more efficient. And what I've seen over the years is people aren't coders anymore. They're more developers where they can take different types of pre-written code and assemble them together. You can call it modular, you can call it composite, all kinds of different terms. And so now we have situations where we have software developers that are not necessarily writing line for line code, but assembling different types of code. And that can be very efficient and fast. It can also be fraught with a lot of problems. So what DevOps is I'm trying to define it just mentally here. So DevOps is a way to combine the software development team with maybe the IT folks and come up with a faster way to produce code. How would you define it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a often debated topic, but DevOps for me is a simple thing in the sense that culturally, IT operations folks are increasingly being tasked to manage their infrastructure as code, and software development organizations are increasingly asked to develop their code in a way that is ready for production operations the moment they're ready to release. So developers are more into the IT operations game than ever before, and IT operations are more into the development game than ever before. And those two organizations historically have not worked well together. But thanks to much of the best practice that underpins this journey towards DevOps, they're working better than ever together as a team. The collaboration, the culture, the alignment is there. And then, of course, you need the tooling to support the process. And the challenge in doing DevOps is that you cannot do it with waterfall native technology or waterfall native tooling. It is simply incongruent with the demands of modern DevOps development. You need modern types of tools. You need DevOps native type tools, tools that are effectively do three things. One, they need to be precise enough from an intelligence perspective so that, you know, organizations can literally trust the intelligence within their tools and turn their back on the tool and know that it's going to help them enable scale and velocity goals. The second thing you need from those DevOps native tools is it needs to be flexible and it needs to be architected in a way where it plugs into the rest of your pipeline. And then lastly, DevOps native tooling needs to be contextual. No two organizations are the same. No two teams are the same. No two applications are the same. What works in this organization versus that organization could be entirely different. So you need tools to sort of contextually apply themselves to the reality of DevOps.
You know, from my perspective, if you look at the last 15 years, I think the precipitating moment for all this was virtualization. And 10, 11 years ago, it really just got started. All of a sudden, virtualization was a tool that the people managing the service had to understand and know themselves. And I think it was only like in 2008, 2009 that the whole concept of DevOps even started being taught. It's not that long a term, has it?
I'd say it's 5 years ago, and virtualization sort of predated DevOps. But you know, for anybody that's familiar with the incredible meteoric rise of Docker and containers as a technology, the simplest way to think about container technology is that it's the next evolution of virtualization. Whereas in the past, you virtualized an instance of a server. Today you're sort of virtualizing smaller units, which goes back to this point. Whether it's software development or whether it's IT operations, the world is increasingly componentized. The world is increasingly modular. And those components and those parts need to flow efficiently through the software development lifecycle. And that's our focus at Sonatype, is helping organizations intelligently manage the flow of those component parts through the software development lifecycle to accelerate quality, security, and innovation.
Well, that was my question. You just stepped on my question. So we're listening to this interview. Sonatype sounds good. There's open source. There's DevOps. So I go to sonatype.com. How can they help my agency reach our goals this year?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that we'd like to do before, assuming that we're right for any organization, is make sure that the organization is faced with the challenges where we can provide value. It's all about customer value. And if you're an organization, an agency in the federal government or elsewhere, and you're developing lots of software and you're leveraging all of the good that open source has to offer, but you're still at some level struggling with some of the challenges inherent in open source, the volume and the variety of the parts coming at you in the open source ecosystem today is astonishing. 31 billion components were requested last year from the central repository. That's just the Java ecosystem. It was 100% year-over-year growth. The year before, there were only 17 billion. The rest of the ecosystems combined, you're talking about 1,000 new open source projects per day, 10,000 wow. versions per day. On average, an open source project releases 14 times per year. So imagine yourself sitting there in a modern development organization and you on average download 230,000 open source components per year. That means that somebody in the organization goes to effectively the virtual equivalent of a Costco 650 times a day. Now, as we're preparing for sort of Thanksgiving break, just imagine what your kitchen would look like in terms of somebody from your house going to Costco 650 times per day. How do you make sense of the volume, the variety of those component ingredients? And it's a very daunting challenge. Now, most organizations today are, in fact, building software from components. So when we have those conversations, we're able to sort of show them how they can intelligently manage the flow of those components so that what they're basically getting is the best component parts from the best suppliers. And within their development lifecycle, they're able to track and trace the location of those parts throughout the entire life cycle and all the way into production.
Now, Sonatype may be the right system at the right time, because we had Microsoft here in the studio a few weeks back, and they talked about a new budding partnership with Red Hat, which I keep thinking of open source. And so lots of different organizations, open source is found on some Microsoft servers, and Microsoft right now has Linux developers on staff. So it's the whole idea of exploding use of open source and using it safely. Let's take a break and come back. We'll maybe mention the agency that your company has worked with to help in this endeavor and talk more about these concepts of agile, DevOps, and the whole idea of maybe repositories. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Matt Howard, EVP Market Development at Sonatype. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Matt Howard, EVP Market Development at Sonatype, S-O-N-A-T-Y-P-E. We've been talking about how organizations can reduce cost for developing software, can increase security, and hopefully go to bed on time and get home and have dinner with your family by using tools that are available out there. And a lot of times have been developed in the commercial world. A lot of people are listening to this going, okay, give me a for instance. Is there an agency maybe you've worked with that Sonatype has worked with that maybe you can share with our audience, please, Matt?
Yeah, we do a lot of work in the federal government. USIS comes to mind in the work that we're doing with them at DHS. In fact, we're hosting a webinar next week with them and our partner Covaris. We have a number of other customers in the federal government market that I'm not sort of at liberty to disclose. I can, however...
I think we understand. No, yeah. We understand completely. I mean, everyone who's listening to this understands that as well. So
I can, however, share that we are a portfolio company with InQtel.
Great. Good to know. So I just tossed out that word security, and the hairs on my back of my neck, well, that's what people are thinking about, too. They're going, oh, yeah, open source, DevOps. What's this got to do with security? So, Matt, I'll ask you the question. So what's all this got to do with security? This makes me vulnerable, doesn't it? I mean, I'm downloading this stuff. I'm grabbing this code from here and there. And so how can you possibly help me with security?
Yeah, I mean, the great question. And the real key is to develop tools that allow you to automate the flow of open source components and third-party libraries in a way where you're leveraging the best that they have to offer, but none of the bad. And to be clear, historically, there have been tools that have been sort of available in a waterfall native context that have been viewed as inhibitors to innovation, whether you're on the development team or whether you're in the C-suite. A lot of the times people look at application security and view it, quite frankly, as, friction in the process that slows down innovation. And what really is happening in sort of DevOps is this idea of DevSecOps, where you've got development organizations with application security professionals and IT operation professionals. And these three tribes are coming together in a collaborative cultural way where they're effectively aligning themselves in terms of process and tools, and they're able to shift things all the way to the left so that before the first line of code is ever written, you've got development professionals now actually thinking about security and in a true DevOps, true continuous innovation type fashion, you're able to imagine a world where you can eliminate mistakes before they're actually made. And if you can eliminate security vulnerabilities before they ever occur, then the downstream effect of that is that you've got fundamentally more secure software, and you as an organization spend substantially less time doing rework, bug fix, and remediation. So get it right to begin with, and the downstream benefit of that supply chain is going to be astonishing.
So many of my listeners are scratching their head going, okay, how does this take place? Now, I think the how is that you take care of a repository of open source software that has been vetted and is secure. And tell us more about this repository and how it fits in with the whole idea of Sonatype.
Well, probably the easiest way to think about it is that today 80% of every modern application is essentially consist of assembled parts, and only 10 to 20% of an application is literally, code on keys, so to speak.
Now, that you should put that in skywriting. That's what most people don't realize. 80% pre-assembled.
That's right. I mean, the world of software these days is effectively Lego blocks. And there's glue around the edges that represents kind of the custom code, if you will. And many people are familiar with products and repositories like GitHub. Where, for example, you would store your source code But there's a separate type of repository, which is where you actually store effectively the Lego blocks or the open source components or the third-party libraries themselves. And when you're building software, you need effectively easy access to those parts, and you need a place to organize, store, and distribute those component parts into the software supply chain, and that's what our repository does.
And just name of the repository, please.
It's the Nexus repository, and the Nexus repository is available in both an open source free version as well as a professional paid supported version.
So it's NEXUS, Nexus repository. Is that what you'd type in and find it?
That's right, the Nexus repository manager.
Great. I want to bounce back to this Agile and DevOps again. When I try to understand it, I'm taking notes here. So when I think about Agile, I think about a change in thinking. When I think about DevOps, I think of a change in culture. And so Agile means, iteration, continuous improvement. But with DevOps, you have to get the whole team's got to be, in all the people in the IT. It's much deeper than just Agile, isn't it?
It is, and one of the sort of fathers of the DevOps movement is actually decades ago, sort of impacted the world in a big way. His name was Edwards Deming, and he taught a Japanese automobile company by the name of Toyota how to actually automate a supply chain and manufacture vehicles with higher quality, more efficiency, and less defects. And in many respects, one of the simplest ways to envision what's happening in software today is to imagine a world where everybody's building software applications the same exact way that Toyota builds cars. And you think about it, you've got an infinite supply of suppliers of parts. What you really need to do is have tools that allow you to automate the source of those parts. So you want the best suppliers, you want the best parts, and then you want the ability to track and trace the location of those parts throughout your manufacturing process or your software development lifecycle. And you want and need the ability to see where those parts live in production, because what you know today isn't necessarily true tomorrow. So in the event that there's a vulnerability that becomes known tomorrow, you can easily find and remediate that vulnerability in production in a matter of minutes as opposed to months. And so that supply chain efficiency in software terms was first really innovated in the 1950s in Japan with Edwards Deming and Toyota.
That's interesting. Last week, Vistage Group invited me to speak in Philadelphia. It was a group of 10 CEOs of steel factories in real kind of a gritty part of Philadelphia. And when I walked through that factory, I thought of the years I spent working in factories and going in and out of factories and that whole concept of improvement. And I think what the experience in Japan many, many years ago was what not necessarily better wrenches or better belts or better windows. It was a cultural change in an emphasis on a quality product, saving money in the long run. And what you folks have done is applied this to the world of software development. And I think there's all kinds of parallels with supplies and warehouse and manufacturing and finished goods. And you can parallel it with open source and component repositories, development teams, and software applications. So there are some parallels there with the regular old factory, aren't there?
Yeah, tremendous parallels, and more so every day. And those parallels really didn't become clear until, probably a decade ago with the rise of componentized software development. But as the world now knows, open source is here to stay, and there is just a tremendous leverage and tremendous benefit by being able to effectively start with prefabricated parts. It saves time, it saves money, it accelerates innovation. Now, the challenge is not all of those parts are created equal. Some of them are, most of them are quite frankly very good, but some of them are not. And the other issue is that those parts tend to age, as we say, like milk, not like wine, meaning over time they go bad. So you have to be very mindful of the quality of the parts that are being consumed by your development organization so that the quality of your software application, the security of your application, and the speed of your innovation pipeline is maximized. And with that type of automation, we think the world of software just continues to improve in years to come.
We have about 30 seconds left. I'm going to bring up a subject here called Risk Management Framework. RMF. Now, what happens with software developers, they like to talk about frameworks and outlines and wireframes and different things. And I think the whole idea of using pre-tested modules of software can increase speed. It can also decrease any kind of risks. And let's take a little break, come back. We'll talk about decreasing risk with using this method for producing software. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, Matt Howard, EVP Market Development at Sonatype. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Matt Howard, EVP Market Development at a company called Sonatype, Sonatype.com. And what Sonatype does, it helps software developers by providing tools and methods to reduce cost for producing software and, incredibly, increase security, which this is, you know, this is not, okay, it's to reduce cost, make it faster, and increase security. Well, maybe two or three, but not all three. And that's what I want to talk about. Before the break, I mentioned risk management framework, which got something to do with security. So what is risk management framework, and how can that help my listeners, increase security and reduce cost at the same time?
You know, the risk management framework is kind of the North Star that's been planted by the folks at NIST and provides practical guidance and programmatic guidance to federal agencies with respect to how they manage information security and technology risk. From our perspective, we see the risk management framework as being really very much aligned with this idea of software supply chains, because in the risk management framework, you're not just responsible for understanding a risk yesterday or today or tomorrow, but you're responsible for understanding and managing risk in a continuous fashion. So that means before you start to innovate, as you innovate, and then once you've innovated and your applications are in production, you need to have sort of a 360-degree view of the risk associated with that environment.
There's a parallel there with manufacturing as well, supply chain, supply side management. It fits right there perfectly.
100%, it does. And so one thing we have done is we've written a paper on how the risk management framework sits within the concept of software supply chain automation. It's available on our website for anybody who's interested. You can go to sonatype.com/government, and there you'll find the risk management framework white paper. In addition, you'll also find the 2016 State of the Software Supply Chain paper, which is really a fantastic read for anybody who's interested in understanding more about the state of open source and software development.
I did a one-hour interview with a guy who has a PhD from MIT and 50 patents. He is the chief technology officer at RSA, and his name is Zully Zulfikar. And we talked about automation. And that's the problem in his world, is that they really can't find cybersecurity professionals, commercial, federal, no one can. And so they're looking at automating some of these things. And this word is kind of dancing around our conversation, the whole idea of automating and automates. We didn't bring it up. It's like between the lines. So does automation fit in? Is this a word that would fit in with what your company can offer?
Well, we did bring it up, and I would say that it's essentially everything. Automation is the way that ultimately you get to scale. It is the way you get to faster outcomes. You can't do things manually and expect to have higher quality software, better security. You need the tools and the intelligence to automate the process. And the tools and the intelligence have to be precise enough so that as a human being, you can turn your back and trust the machine to automate the process. Then you can trust the machine to help you achieve your goals in terms of increased velocity, increased scale, and indeed increased innovation. And that for us is a very, very key point about why DevOps native tools is the only way to automate the software supply chain. You cannot do it with traditional waterfall native tooling.
Years ago, I had Vivek Kundra sit in that chair and talk about a 25-point plan for moving to the cloud. And I see echoes of that all through the years. What I also see is a encouragement to use open source software from the federal government. And I see the government consumption of open source increasing and moving up and up and up. And that's maybe why people who are looking at open source, they may not have buyer's remorse if they go download the white paper and realize some of the values of open source and some of the values of crowdsourcing security in this platform. It may be resistant to some people. I can see some generals over in the Pentagon going, no, we're not going to have any open source here. We want it all proprietary. But it's safer and faster, so they have to consider it.
Yeah. I mean, look, the practical reality is that with enough eyeballs in the world, all bugs, in theory, become shallow. But the other practical reality is that open source exists and allows us as innovators to stand on the shoulders of giants who have gone before us and reuse their innovations as we continue to innovate. So those Lego blocks, those reusable parts, are what allows us to, you know, go faster for less. That said, you know, we have to sort of recognize that not all of those Lego blocks are created equal, and we need tooling and intelligence to, you know, allow us to leverage all of the greatness that open source has to offer, but at the same time, avoid the bad. And the good news is that tools and intelligence exist from companies like ours that enable that process as we, you know, continue to automate software supply chains.
So I'm trying to put my role of a listener who maybe is developing code for the federal government and goes out to a maybe a repository and downloads something. Now, this code they download, there could be issues with license types. There could be could not be secure, you know, have security problems in there. So you really have to be kind of careful and judicious about deploying some of these general concepts of open source and pre-built open source components.
Yeah, and let me give you some context in terms of facts. I mentioned the software supply chain report that's available on the website. But, you know, essentially what we did last year was we took a look at 3,000 organizations and 25,000 applications. And you know, here's what I can tell you, that, you know, the typical modern software application that consists of 80% assembled parts and 20%, you know, custom code, within the 80% that's assembled parts, you know, 1 in 16 of those components contains a known vulnerability. That's the fact. And, you know, when you sort of reflect on that, you have to ask yourself the question, well, how is it that that known vulnerability could be prevented from entering into my software supply chain? And that's really the issue of automation and creating tooling so that developers, release managers, build managers, various people within the software factory have the intelligence at their fingertips to sort of see the mistake before it ever enters into production. And quite frankly, getting quality designed into the process, getting security shifted all the way left before the first line of code is ever written, that is how you know, supply chains get automated and how innovation gets accelerated.
And so if we, in general, talked about your company, they would handle, I'm trying to put all these different terms together in parallels with the manufacturing world. This would be supply chain software management or supply chain software tools, supply chain tools. Is it the concept here?
Well, software supply chain automation, and the world is just now really sort of coming to grips with the fact that how software is built today is very different from how it was built in the past. And today, the process of building software really does very closely resemble the same process that's used to manufacture physical goods. And as a result, we're simply giving developers and enterprises the tools that they need to manufacture software applications the same way that Toyota manufactures cars.
So modular components are safe. So tell us the difference between GitHub and your repository again, just to clear it up from my mind.
So, at the end of every software development lifecycle, there's a production application that's there for release. And inside that production application is effectively code, and 80% of the code is effectively the assembled components, the libraries, the open source, the Lego blocks, if you will. And 20% or less is custom code, developers, you know, with fingers on keyboards. You need to manage source code, and you need to manage it in a collaborative or a workflow. And GitHub and other tools like that are very, very good at that. But it's separate from the source code. You need to manage the Lego blocks or the component parts or the libraries. And that's what our Nexus repository does very well.
I've worked in shipping over the years, and normally you have something called a bill of lading. It says, one side of this box is one, two, and three things. And I think what we have here is almost like a software bill of lading or bill of materials or something. It's like, okay, here's what's in this box. It's a description of what's in there, and is validated. And so someone can pull it down from your site or the site you manage and be assured that it's going to be there. So is this like a bill of lading? Is that what we have here?
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, I talked about, you know, the supply chain from a software perspective sources the best parts from the best suppliers, tracks and trace those parts through the software development lifecycle, and knows precisely where those parts are in production. And when you know the precise location of components in production, you essentially have the bill of materials. Just last week, on Wednesday on Capitol Hill, Dr. Kevin Fu from the University of Michigan testified on Capitol Hill in front of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, and he was asked the question about the Internet of Things and medical devices. And specifically, the question was, hospitals have no idea what software is on those devices, such as a pacemaker, for example. And his reaction is, that's absolutely correct. They have no idea. Now, it's not that the manufacturers of these devices are doing anything sort of intentionally to hide that information. But the fact is, the process, the protocol, and the discipline to make the bill of materials available is now within our reach. And so it's certainly plausible and not unreasonable to think that consumers of software would have access to a bill of materials stating precisely what's inside that application.
Bill of Materials, Parallels Bill Lading. Interesting. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We're talking about software development and maybe some personal choices that you have in your technology. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we're speaking with Matt Howard, EVP Market Development at Sonatype. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Matt Howard, EVP, Market Development at Sonatype, S-O-N-A-T-Y-P-E. Nothing to do with typesetting, a lot to do with efficiently producing software, reducing risk, increasing speed of developing software. And you know what happens? I go to events all the time. I'm going to an event tonight. I'm going to an event next week. And what always happens, people sit next to me and they go, oh, you're the guy with the risk. Oh, yeah. Hey, I heard that guy Matt last week. And, well, how does he know all this stuff? How do you keep up with all this stuff? What does he read? And so I'm asking you, Matt, the question that's going to ask to me. So you seem to know a little bit about open source software and testing it and DevOps and Agile and this guy Deming. And so what do you read to keep up with all this stuff?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So I read a lot of periodicals. A lot of books. Probably two of my favorite that really speak to everything we talked about here today are the original one was a book called The Goal by Eli Goldratt, phenomenally famous book that sort of talks about manufacturing efficiencies in a physical goods context. More recently, there was a book by the name of the Phoenix Project, which was written by Gene Kim, and effectively takes the concept of the goal and applies it to modern IT and software development and really brings forth everything that we've talked about here today. So for anybody who's interested in the topic, I would highly encourage them to take a look at The Phoenix Project by Gene Kim. It's a wonderful read.
I begged him to come in the studio. I said, Gene, the next time you're in town, we'll record at midnight. Just get in here. But he comes into town regularly. In fact, he's like a superstar. People get their picture with him and tweet it out, and they go, hey, this is Gene. Everyone loves it. He's a likable guy here.
He's a very nice guy, and you're right. He's become a bit of a superstar, but his thinking with respect to software supply chains and innovation and automation is really clever and profound at the same time. So I would encourage anybody interested in the topic to read The Phoenix Project.
I do a podcast for an aerospace company, and we talk about wiring. And when people in aerospace rewire aircraft, they look for certain SAE specifications. And if it complies with an SAE specification, then they know they can use it because it can tolerate heat changes, it can tolerate moisture and all kinds of different aspects of wiring for aerospace. Well, let's take this manufacturing concept and apply it to software. So if someone wants to use a block of code and downloads it from the site you manage, how do they know it's any good? I mean, is there a good housekeeping seal of approval or a imprimatur, a nihil obstat, as the Catholics would say? So how do you know it's good?
That's kind of the secret sauce of our business. I mean, at the end of the day, we have the repository manager, which we spoke about, where you organize, store, and distribute open source components and third-party libraries into your development process. But the additional layer of value that we provide is powered by something called the Nexus IQ server and put forth in two products, one called Nexus Lifecycle and one called Nexus Firewall. And these two products effectively give you what you're looking for in terms of the good housekeeping seal of approval, or think of it as the FDA food label, so that when you're looking at an open source component or a third-party library, as a developer, as a development manager, as a policy or governance person inside of a development process, it is readily apparent to you that it is either of the highest quality or not. You can see security, vulnerabilities known. You can understand how to remediate them if they're there. You can see how to upgrade to the current version that doesn't have the vulnerability. You can see licensing information. You can see age. You can see popularity. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's this massive supply of open source components that's readily overwhelming developers. And realistically, our data, our good housekeeping seal of approval data, gives them the ability to sort of make very quick decisions about which component parts are, in fact, the highest quality to build applications with.
You know, I guess general wisdom is, best practice is that the most current software update is the safest and most secure. Is that always true?
It is not, and it's a great question. You know, there's an interesting amount of research that our data services team does to really understand quality within the ecosystem of open source and third-party components. You know, it's safe to say that when a component is brand new, it's brand new, and it doesn't have a lot of support in the community, and it's a bit like a toddler, and it tends to sort of fall down and scrape its knees from time to time. And you know, but when a component is, say, you know, 7 or 8 years old, it's in dog years, it's kind of getting up there in age, and it starts to lose steam and potentially suffer the effects of old age. So there is an optimal point at which an open source component and a third-party library is at its peak performance, somewhere between the ages of 2 and 5 years.
Huh, that's interesting. So the most recent may not be the safest, most secure.
Not always. Huh. It's not a bad idea to look at the most recent, but quite frankly, the data that we provide to developers and to development managers and other constituents inside of the life cycle is precisely the information you need to make the decision. Do I want the earliest version? Do I want the next earliest version? Or do I want the most popular version with no known vulnerabilities? And that information is readily available to you thanks to our quote-unquote good housekeeping seal of approval data.
In the aerospace community, in the wiring division, people like the old standard tested wiring components because they've been around for many, many decades and have been proven. And many times they're wary. And that's the big challenge with new manufacturing of like carbon nanotubes is to proving to aerospace engineers that they are as durable as the old stuff, because this is another manufacturing process where, you know, sometimes the newer components may have some weaknesses that haven't been tested yet, you know. And so I think that's one value, is that tested components get a certification at the tested management levels, and you can be assured that it's going to be safe. And so that's where the housekeeping seal appeal moves in, is that it's been safe. And wait, you can use a new version if you want, but waitlist tested first and we approve it. That might be the approach, huh?
Yeah, something like that. That's exactly right.
So what happens if you have a new version of software that has all the bells and whistles that you want, and it may not be safe, but it's so tempting to use it because it's so easy. This is the moth being drawn to the candle, isn't it? Oh, it's so nice. It's so fast. It's easy. It looks good. Ooh, and oh, by the way, it's got a security flaw, but who cares? It's fast.
Well, that's exactly the issue today. Without tooling like ours, you have developers who are the moth to the candle, so to speak, and they see a new open source component or a third-party library that looks cool and interesting and neat and different. And they want to use it. And in a lot of large enterprises, in particular federal agencies, you know, there is a process by which that developer has to go through with legal and security and oversight and bureaucracy to get approval to even pull that component into the development environment to begin to experiment and innovate. And that is a lot of expensive manual overhead. It's a lot of friction in the process. It tends to slow down innovation. As I mentioned earlier, oftentimes security and modern development process is viewed as an inhibitor of innovation. That's one of the reasons why. But if the developer could sort of examine something that was new and shiny, the moth to flame, and the security constituency and the governance constituency and the legal constituency within that organization had the confidence that the developer would effectively consume only components that were in compliance with defined policy, then the amount of manual oversight, the amount of expense and friction in the system is mitigated. And it's that kind of automation that we bring to the table.
You have a two-minute drill here. They have it in football. We have it in the radio studio. You got 2 minutes here. And tell me exactly what's going to happen with open source and the federal government in the next 5 years.
Well, I can tell you,
this is a good one.
I can tell you one thing is for sure. It's going to grow. The world in 2014, there were 17 billion components requested from the central repository, which is the Java ecosystem. Last year, it was 31 billion. So it's a near 100% year-over-year growth curve. We expect that curve to continue for Java. We know the JavaScript and the NPM ecosystem is exploding exponentially right now. We know the same is true for all formats, quite frankly. So open source is here to stay. And in the next 5 years, you'll see government agencies building software using open source. I think you will see them doing it in a much more automated fashion. And I think the outcome of that automation will be, you know, better innovation, better quality, and better security. And we intend to support that with our tooling.
And so what kind of trade shows does your company participate in? Do you do any speaking in town here? Where can we learn more just from people like you talking to the community?
Well, certainly we do a lot of trade shows and physical face-to-face events at a variety of different developer conferences, security conferences, IT operations conferences. Just recently, 2 weeks ago, I was actually in San Francisco at the DevOps Enterprise Summit, which is, ironically enough, hosted by Gene Kim, author of the Phoenix Project. But one thing we're a big fan of, and we just hosted it last week, as a matter of fact, is a virtual conference online where we're assembling DevOps practitioners from all the different tribes.
Development. And what's that called?
It's called DevOps, All Day DevOps.
Huh.
All Day DevOps. And it assembles practitioners from the various tribes, software development, security, and elsewhere inside the enterprise to listen to thought leaders, practitioners, real-world enterprise engineers doing real-world DevOps. And it's amazing to see the type of learning and information that gets shared and the value to the community.
Good value to the community. I'm sure your company will grow drastically in the next few years. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Matt Howard, EVP Market Development at Sonatype. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.